A lot can happen in 3 years, like a chatbot may be your new best friend. But what won't change? Needing health insurance. UnitedHealthcare Tri-Term Medical Plans, underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage that lasts nearly 3 years in some states. Learn more at uh1.com.
Hello and welcome to a brand new Arsblog Arscast right here on arsblog.com. How are you? Hope you're well. Today's show features a very special guest. You know who it is because, you know, we've been teasing it a bit over the weekend on the social media, and also because, you know, it's the title of the episode. So, you know, I'm not giving anything away. It is former Arsenal player, former Arsenal captain, Cesc Fabregas. This is an interview that has been in the works for, I would say, at least 9 months, maybe a year. And it's one of those things that's quite difficult to organize because, well, the life of a professional footballer means that they're sometimes at home, they're sometimes not at home, they're traveling or they're not traveling. And also Cesc is someone who has a young family, and with kids, that's another thing that has to be prioritized over, you know, an interview for an Arsenal podcast. But we did get it organized, you know, after much back and forth, a bit of wrangling here and there, and we looked at dates and all kinds of stuff. We had it sorted. April the 7th. That's when it was supposed to take place. I was going to fly to Nice and then travel on to Monaco, and we were going to do the podcast face-to-face in a hotel in Monaco. But, and you all know what the but is, the coronavirus has put paid to that because of, the hotel already cancelled my reservation. So I don't know if they're closed down or whatever it might be. And air travel, if it's still a possibility, doesn't seem like the wisest thing to do right now, because we need to try and stay away from each other as much as possible. So it was like, oh, is this ever going to happen? But a few more messages and we decided we would do it on Skype, which we did on Friday night. And it was a thoroughly enjoyable conversation. And I hope you are going to enjoy it. I know from my social media mentions at the weekend, there is a variance in opinion about Cesc. Some people still really like him. Some people don't like him because of, the various things that we're going to talk about in this conversation. Leaving Arsenal for Barcelona, coming back to the Premier League to play for Chelsea. And that's fine. I'm not telling anybody how they should think. I just would ask some of the people who have directed messages at him and also to me, because I've been involved in this conversation, just maybe think about what you're saying online to somebody. You know, this isn't a faceless entity that you're talking to. It is another human being. And some of it was really quite unpleasant. But I don't want to dwell on that, and I don't want to get hung up on that, because this really was a fantastic conversation. And throughout, Cesc was really open, really honest. And whether you like some of the things that he says or not, you have to appreciate that openness and that honesty. And I think that, at the core of any good conversation, any good podcast, any good interview, if you have that, I think you have something that's worth listening to. And I think this is very much that. We speak about how he came to join Arsenal, what it was like as a 15, 16-year-old coming into a club, you know, at that time, at the height of its powers, at the height of its success under Arsene Wenger, with amazing players, how he developed as a footballer, as a person, the period where we didn't win things, where he was instrumental, fundamental to the team, and probably our best player for a long time, but that wasn't matched perhaps in other areas of the team. And we talk about that. We talk about the lack of success. We talk about signings we might have made and perhaps should have made to make the team more competitive. We talk about joining Barcelona, leaving Barcelona, coming back to England. Could he have come back to Arsenal?
joining Chelsea. So, you know, it's all in there. So, you know, why don't we just get on with it? And you can stop listening to me talking about the interview and you can actually listen to the interview. So this is me and Cesc Fabregas. Right, time for a very special guest on a very special Arscast episode. There's no need for a big, long intro talking about who he is, what he's done, because you all know that already. It's my pleasure to welcome to the show Cesc Fabregas. Hi, Cesc.
Hi, how are you?
I'm okay. You're all keeping well over there at the moment?
Yeah, well, it's a different situation. You know, you have to get used to it. There are circumstances that we cannot control, unfortunately. Mm. It's all around the world, and we need to suffer in the best way we can.
Mm. Well, we're going to talk not about coronavirus, because I think everybody needs a little bit of an escape from that at the moment. So we're going to talk about Arsenal first and foremost. And I'm curious as to how the move came about back in 2003. And I just want to remind people that Arsblog was the site which broke that news first and foremost, because we had a little connection who knew a little something about what was going on there. But, you know, you were 16 years of age. You know, what did Arsene Wenger say to you to convince you to come from, you know, a club like Barcelona, your hometown club, and come and join Arsenal?
Yeah, well, first of all, everything started one day that we finished one of our games in Barcelona with the youth team. And I finished, and it was normally every Saturday. We used to play at 10 o'clock, 10 a.m. Mm. And at 12 o'clock, normally, the Iniesta team, the Iniesta generation used to play after us. So
right.
Sometimes with my parents, I asked them to stay, you know, and watch them play and learn a little bit. And I remember that day there was my agent, because, you know, at that age already we had agents like very young, you know, especially these young players that could potentially, you know, make it and stuff. But now it's even worse. Now you see players at 13, 12, 10 years old, you know, with agents. But at that age, I remember, at 15, 16, I got this man, and he told me, listen, come to me one second, I want to talk to you. And he basically said to me that that Arsenal are interested in me, that mm-hmm. they came to watch me around 30, 40 times already. And I was a bit impressed. I was surprised because obviously, you know, when you are young, you don't think about these things. You just play, you have fun, you enjoy with your mates. And you hear things, you feel that, you know, you do well, and you go to the Spanish national team and people talk well about you, but it's you're too young to accept or to even realize what could happen. So, you know, I didn't give it that much of an importance, to be honest. And after, when the season was getting to an end, he called us again, me and my parents, the agent, and told us that Arsenal wanted to meet us, that there is this scout, the head scout, that wanted to meet us, Francis Cagigao. I'm sure you all know him well. And we met in a hotel in Barcelona, very close to the stadium, to the Camp Nou. And it was there where he started talking and explaining the situation. He knew everything, absolutely everything about me. I was, wow, this shocked me, to be honest, because I was, I think I was still 15 at that time.
Yeah.
And he impressed me very much. He looked like a very decent man, a very, very hard worker that was doing his job very well. And he obviously told me that he wanted to invite me and my parents to London, to London Colney, to speak to Arsene.
Mm.
And I was like, what? Are you serious? Like, who am I? You know, like,
sure.
I'm 15 years old. Like, Arsene Wenger is the first team coach of Arsenal. Like, for me, it's like a picture that I cannot even imagine at that moment. And so, you know, it just happened. We went to London during the summer. Steve Rowley came to meet us at the airport. He gave us a little tour around London. It was a very sunny day that day, actually.
One of the few sunny days.
Yeah, that helped a lot. And we headed to London Calling, and there was David Dean and Arsene Wenger. And I was like, wow, they just came for me, because Arsene was on holiday. He was in Paris. He just flew over to meet me. And, you know, I was like, I didn't know what to say, to be honest. And then they started talking to my parents and asking them things about when I was little and stuff like that. And after we were talking for about an hour, they made a proposal, which I went out of the room, because I didn't even want to hear about it, or I was not interested in money or wherever. So I just left it to my parents and the agent. And after that, you know, they showed me everything at the training ground. I met some people that are still working there. So everything about that day, I remember like if it was yesterday. I was a little kid enjoying, because, you know, at the end we all talk about trophies, about great moments. But for me, that was a great moment that I will never be able to forget.
Yeah. What were the first impressions then? I mean, you had no hesitation about moving, you know, at 16 years of age from Spain to London, which is, you know, a big move at any age. But, you know, at 16 years of age, I know you've got the support structures from the club, but it is still a big decision to make. And from a footballing point of view, you know, was it because you felt maybe your chances were better at Arsenal, or were there other factors in that, or was this just, you know, this opportunity came and you were impressed by Arsene, by the club, and it was something you had to take?
It's a bit of everything, to be honest. It's difficult for me to say one thing, because everything about it was just the dream move for me. But it was difficult. I will not lie. Not the move in general, because I was 15. But the thing is that when you are 16, or when your birthday comes to 16, then Barcelona signs a contract with you, no?
Yeah.
Basically, and the office in Barcelona used to call me every year to renew my contract after the season ended. So when they were calling me, and they were calling my parents, obviously we were not picking up. So they were phoning, and we were under pressure, because I wanted to be nice and pick up the phone and say, listen, we are not coming anymore. But they suggested that this was not the best case or the best thing that we could do. So we just ignored them, you know, and it was, for me, it was difficult.
It's a bit awkward.
I have to say, because, you know, you're a young kid. I always like to do things the right way, or the most honest way. And you realize, and now more than ever, that sometimes in sport, in football, sometimes in life, you know, you have to do what's best for you, you know. And in that case, I had to make this decision, which was hard for the age I had. But I was so confident, so determined to go to Arsenal after what I had seen, how they had spoken to me, what they were offering me in the sportive way, how Arsene and the scouts looked up to me. That was very, very, very special for me. And then I had to analyze as well the situation that was happening in Barcelona in that moment. You know, there was elections, there was many things going around, changing presidents, changing coaches, And the fact that I had many good players in front of me of the age, you know, in terms of age, like Iniesta, Xavi was just starting to play, you know, he was 22 or 23, he was a young player. Not many kids were coming through the academy at that time.
Yeah.
So I just felt, you know what, let's just give it a shot, you know, I have confidence in myself, but never thinking that I would become like a professional football player or anything. This was always my dream, but it was never something that I believed that could happen, because sometimes you see it, you know, as a dream, you know, you see your heroes play and stuff, and you just think to yourself, ah, this is impossible, this is just a dream. So when I first made my debut at Arsenal, it was, you know, a very, very special day for me.
I mean, To hear you say something like that is kind of amazing, because it was very obvious early on that there was, you know, a huge talent. And we know, I think we know that, like, you can be a really talented footballer and not make it. There are other things which can define you as a professional or your chance. You know, very good players sometimes just don't get an opportunity, or sometimes a door opens for a player, which gives them a chance that they didn't necessarily expect. But, you know, when you've got Arsene Wenger bringing you over from Barcelona at that age, he obviously saw something in you to go to those lengths to bring you into the club, particularly when you think about Arsenal at that time had just done the double in 2002 mm-hmm. and they'd won the FA Cup in 2003 and should have won the league that season as well. You know, did that give you, when you stop to think about it, did that give you a kind of confidence that you're being brought into a club that is, you know, probably at the top of its powers in modern history? Was that something that you got confidence for?
Big part. Yeah. Because I was always also talking to Manchester United, because they were calling me and stuff like that. But I just felt Arsenal was the club. It was the club, because we analyzed it, you know, because obviously you are still young. You follow a lot of Barcelona. It's your team. Your heroes are playing for Barcelona. So you just follow up La Liga more or less. But yeah. I used to really like, for example, Steven Gerrard for some reason. Like, he was a special talent when he was a young kid. So I followed Premier League quite a bit. And of course, Arsenal were doing really well at that moment. But I analyzed it with my parents and with some friends and stuff, and we thought that Arsenal is the club. They are starting to build something special. You could see they were winning. They had a special style of play that Arsene likes, and you know, we studied a bit of the situation, and definitely Arsenal was the right move and the right club for me, because this is for sure. I thought it straight away. I didn't even think about going anywhere else, that's for sure.
Were you in any way intimidated by, you know, coming into a club where the likes of Patrick Vieira, Dennis Bergkamp, Thierry Henry, players of that stature, Robert Pires, were, you know, so successful, so renowned, so good? Was that in any way intimidating, or did you view that perhaps as an opportunity to learn from guys like that? And what were they like to a 16-year-old kid from Barcelona coming in the door?
No, definitely. I took it as an opportunity. But at the same time, I saw it so far away. Like, you're going to Arsenal, and yes, Arsene told me you'll be training with the first team, which, yeah, it's amazing. But you don't really kind of believe it until you are there. So I thought it would take a little bit longer. I didn't think that basically straight away I would be competing against them for a place,
sure,
you know, to be playing regularly for the first team. I thought it could take longer, you know, that I had the opportunity to learn, that you know, to see how things going. No, basically it happened straight away, you know. So yeah, but they were amazing. Like, I have no words of how grateful, you know, I am to obviously Arsenal, but the players. I always say the same thing. I was a privilege. I was so lucky to be able to be brought up by these great players and great people, great men, because, you know, sometimes you can have a group of players that they don't really care about the young players, or they treat them a little bit bad. Me, I was lucky. I will tell you why, because sometimes you see a bunch of young players, like 6 or 7 players, and, you know, they get on together and stuff. They don't really care about the young players, especially nowadays. That is different to what it was before. But me, basically, I was kind of alone in that first team, because I was like the little kid. I was the little boy, and everyone was taking care of me, and I was making mistakes. They were helping me. They were talking to me. You know, they were making me feel good. They were so positive towards me, and that helped me so much. Because if you have 7 players to take care of when you are an experienced player, sometimes you lose the way a little bit. But because it was just me, basically. Philip Senderos, unfortunately, was injured, you know, a lot from his back the first 2 years. There was a few others like Sepp Larsson, John Giroud, Ryan Smith, which had a big injury as well very early on, Quincy. But, you know, that was regularly with them every day. It was me, and I feel privileged and blessed for that, because if it happened in any other way or in any other situation, I think maybe it could have been different. But I think I was mentally strong enough to handle every situation.
Is that something that you've taken with you through your career, in terms of how you deal with young players and young talent that come through at the teams you've played for?
Yeah, definitely. I remember this so much, because, for example, here at Monaco now, 80% of the kids of the team are kids. So, you know, even if my French is really not that great yet, you know, I talk to them a lot. You know, I like to make them feel good, confident, because we all made mistakes. You know, even now I make lots of mistakes. So imagine a young player who's starting, you know, with a lot of potential like here at Monaco, and yeah, it's like you are not a coach, but you are becoming to be that experienced player, mature player that sometimes I feel that I am implying that role of a coach, you know, inside the dressing room with the young players.
Sure. Tell me about Arsene Wenger and about him as a coach, and the way that he develops you as a player and a person. I think we all spent so much time with Arsene, whether it was, you know, because he was at the club for so long, he was there for 22 years, and he became, in many ways, just kind of part of our existence as Arsenal fans. And we mm-hmm. whether we thought we knew everything about him, I'm not quite sure. But you, when you've had this sort of relationship with somebody for that long, you sort of say, well, this is what he does here, and this is what he's like, and this is how he deals with players. You know, he likes for players to express themselves and to get the best out of their talent. And, you know, different managers have different approaches. But you know, having arrived at 16 years of age, what was he like with you to kind of develop you as a player and get you ready? Because, you know, you were 16 when you arrived, but the second season you played nearly 50 games, I think, yeah, something like that. So, you know, as a 17-year-old, you were like right in there, and you were performing to a very high level. But how does he prepare you for that? And how does he keep you focused on that trajectory of development that you have to have?
Listen, Arsene is a very, very honest man. He is outstanding. He was unbelievable with me. And the thing is that, in a way, I was lucky, as you said, because every coach is different and, you know, they all behave in different ways. Arsene gave me total freedom to express my talents, everything that I had in me. And he never put pressure on you. As a young player, I think he always gave me this positive vibe that I know I can do what I have to do what I know that I can do. You know, he didn't ask for anything special. Just be yourself. I mean, look at all the talents or the players that Arsene signs. They are basically all intelligent players that understand the game more or less the same way. You will not see Arsene trying to sign someone who just runs because he likes running. No, he likes intelligent players that associate themselves, that understand the Arsenal way, you know. And I made, as I said, you know, many mistakes sometimes, maybe because I was growing up in that great team, my mistakes were not seen as big as sure. they could have if I was in a worse team, let's say. But Arsene would not say anything to me. He would just train me. Sometimes after trainings individually, he will just, after everyone's gone, he will keep me there by myself, and he will make me train on something that he thinks I can work with, my final pass, my left foot, looking behind my shoulders to see that how to put my body in the right place at the right time. Little things that you don't think they are important. You don't think they are important, but then you train them, and one day you click, and on the pitch you do it by yourself, and that makes you a better player. Mm. And on top of that, you know, when he felt it was the right time, he will call you into his dressing room. Well, not his dressing room, his office, sorry.
Sure, yeah, yeah. Yeah.
And, you know, he will tell you what he thinks, how you're doing, what he thinks you need to improve. But in general, he's very patient, which obviously now I understand that nowadays it's more difficult to be patient with young players, but he had that patience with me and with many others that it's very difficult to have in football, in the football world, because everyone wants to win. Everyone wants to put pressure on you. If you don't win, you know how it is.
Yeah.
You guys, the fans, the press, everyone is after you. So with me, he had a lot of courage, and forever I'll be grateful for that.
You were talking about his patience. I mean, is one of the things that people have said down the years is that maybe he did need sometimes to be a little more impatient, perhaps, with some players or some performances and things like that. Would that just have been out of his nature? Was that just not in him?
I think he just didn't like to kill a player.
Yeah.
He played a lot with the mental aspect of the game, and he knows, like, for example, a player like Thierry Henry or Patrick Vieira, they are so strong mentally. He doesn't need to tell them anything.
Mm.
You know, like, he knows that they know what they have to do.
Sure.
He knows that they know that if they played bad, the next day they will do better. He didn't need to tell them anything. But in others, maybe he was, you know, a bit scared that if he tells them something as well, maybe they will collapse, they will put their head down. And he was always, I think, a little bit afraid. I never really, maybe in 8 years, I saw Arsene really angry at halftime. I remember one time at Anfield, he lost it there. Maybe a couple of times more, but he was that man. What you see in the press conference, what you see after a loss, when they interview them then, when you're in a hot moment,
yeah,
on Sky, this is who he is. He really is like that, you know. And maybe sometimes he should have lost it more. Sometimes I felt that we were playing so poorly that he should have lost it more.
Mm.
But this is the way he is, you know. He was taking care, especially when I was there, my last, let's say, 4 or 5 years, we were very young.
Yeah.
You know, so the same way that he didn't need to tell anything to Sol Campbell, to Ljungberg, Dennis, and all of this, he was a bit afraid, I think, to tell, you know, let's say my generation or the group of players that,
sure,
I was with in the last 5 years, something that could, you know, potentially have a bad effect to the team.
Yeah, I mean, that's the thing. You don't have to tell Sol Campbell or Thierry Henry or Dennis Bergkamp anything, but when you are trying to build a young team, and you could see what he was trying to do, obviously, with the move to the new stadium and the financial restrictions and trying to build this group of players, this group of young players to grow together and develop together, maybe there is, you know, sometimes a need to just be a bit more instructive with young players, because as you say, you make mistakes, and it's how you learn from those mistakes that allows you to develop.
Yeah, but he's instructive, huh?
Yeah.
He gives instructions and he corrects people. I'm just talking about the way of saying it.
Okay.
You know what I mean?
Sure.
Like, for example, I had Conte, for example, or Luis Aragonés, or even Mourinho. They have another approach.
Yeah.
Guardiola.
Yeah.
I will not tell you how it is, but you can imagine.
I think we can guess.
It's a different approach. Arsene had his way. And you cannot say that it was a bad way, because, you know, how successful he's been everywhere he's been. But yeah, I mean, I think for me, I see it always in a positive way, because of how he dealt with me personally.
Mm.
After we all have our opinions of how we see things, because you will see things in another way that I will see. Or when I'm inside the dressing room, I would say to myself, well, boss, I would have done it or said it in a different way,
yeah,
perhaps sometimes. But listen, he was very stable. Arsene was very, very stable. And I think when you are so successful for so many years in a world where everyone tries to eat you alive like it's football, and you have so much pressure because a coach has so much pressure from the fans, from the press, from the players that don't play, or from the players that are not happy, from the directors, and you need to win, you need to win, you're making a new stadium. It's not easy at all. And I think the success he's had is because he was so stable in key moments where, you know, he could have said, I just leave everything. I'm not ready for it. Or he loses there. He loses in another place. And he just kept cool basically 90% of the time. And I think that made it very, very special the way he did it.
Mm. So they were a hugely successful team. Had gone the unbeaten season. You won the FA Cup in 2005. And then there was a period where there was no success. Where the expectations were here, and because of various factors, obviously the emergence of Chelsea as a financial force was a big part of that, and the success wasn't there, the trophies weren't there. That became a big issue, a big burden, I think, for the club. How much did you guys, as players, feel that? And feel that growing over the years, because it was 2005 and obviously 2014 before that was broken with the FA Cup. But it was building and building, and you think of opportunities like 2007, 2008, where, you know, we probably should have won the league. There were other factors involved in that as well. Do you kind of lose belief in a way, like when that 07-08 season happened and the injuries and the way things happened towards the end? Does that become a psychological burden?
Well, I mean, it depends. It depends. Obviously, even for myself, you know, when I started in 2003 with the Invincibles, and even though I didn't play any game, I was with them every single day. I experienced absolutely everything like any other first team player, you know, and I knew what it meant to win. You know, I remember before a Man United game, one day in a training, Patrick Vieira made this crazy tackle on Freddy Ljungberg. Like, and me, I didn't know where to look. I didn't know what to say because I was like, wow. We're playing tomorrow a big game and this tackle like that. And Lauren comes to me and he says, hey, you see, this is a wake-up call for the whole team because we're doing a terrible training like this. And me, I'm like, wow, this is crazy. And no one said anything. And but it's true that after that second, after that tackle, the level of training improved by 80%. And these little things that you see from winners, from experienced players, from I mean, fantastic players, you know, they're world-class players. And it's true that you, the fans, as the young players, the media, everyone got a bit spoiled by that amazing team. And then we went close the next year to winning the league again. I think we came second. We won the FA Cup against an amazing Manchester United team. Then we reached the Champions League final, which I still think today we should have won, because 11 against 11, we were the better side. Mm. Even sometimes with 10 players, okay, we were not a threat, maybe, but we were really well organized. You know, the Barcelona didn't have chances, basically. And they had an amazing team. Ronaldinho, Eto'o, Xavi, Iniesta, Van Bommel, Puyol. I mean, what can you say? So we were close. I mean, but it's true that after that, you know, when you have big, big, big figures, you know, like Ashley Cole, like Patrick, like Edu, after, you know, a few years, for 1 or 2 years, Thierry goes as well. How do you replace these players? Yeah. I mean, you know, you will find one maybe that can be as good as Sol Campbell or Patrick Vieira, but you will not find five or six like them, you know. Yeah. Obviously, there was the change to the Emirates, which was economically a big, big step for the club. There was, you know, not much money to spend on players, and that, even if you don't want to accept it, it's a big, you know, minus.
Yeah.
To compete against the Chelsea's, against the United's, because, you know, football, at the end of the day, it's all about, not all, but it's a lot about the money and how much you can spend to pay players and to spend players. So we didn't have that on our side. And I still think we came close a couple of times, as you mentioned. But it was frustrating to compete, to give your all, playing for Arsenal, knowing that the last few years have been so successful, and then all of a sudden not winning. I think we all enjoyed playing at the Emirates, having a beautiful, fantastic stadium with so much capacity. But I think as a fan, you will tell me better than anyone that you want to win.
Sure.
You know? You want to win trophies, you want to celebrate, and I don't blame you for that. But I think the club and Arsene said, okay, we have this beautiful stadium for the future. Maybe we will pay for it in trophies for a couple of years, but we will come back. I think this was the thought of the club.
Mother's Day is around the corner. Find the perfect gift for the mom in your life with a stunning piece of jewelry from Blue Nile. From timeless pearls to dazzling gemstones, Blue Nile has something she'll adore. Need it fast? Most items can ship overnight. Plus, enjoy guaranteed free shipping and returns. Don't miss our special Mother's Day deals. Save big on the season's most beautiful trends. For a limited time, get up to 50% off by going to BlueNile.com. That's BlueNile.com.
Ryan Reynolds here from Mint Mobile. With the price of just about everything going up during inflation, we thought we'd bring our prices down. So to help us, we brought in a reverse auctioneer, which is apparently a thing.
Mint Mobile Unlimited Premium Wireless. How to get 30, 30, how to get 30, how to get 20, 20, 20, how to get 20, 20, how to get 15, 15, 15, 15, just $15 a month? Sold!
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Do you feel like maybe the balance wasn't quite right at times between youth and experience? And you mention all those big players who came and went, and the idea of growing a young squad together is a really great one if it works. And, you know, to an extent it did. But I remember at the time certainly feeling like we're just one player, maybe two players away from getting the mix exactly right. I remember summers where, for example, we were linked with Xavi Alonso, and you think, wow, what would have happened if we could have...
I was with Xavi on the phone the whole summer. He was dying to come.
Oh.
He was like literally begging everyone to go to Arsenal. He really wanted to come. And I, to be honest, I did my best.
I'm sure you did.
I spoke to who I had to speak. I gave my opinion. I thought that he was a fantastic addition for us at that time. And yeah, I have to say that a couple of times like that, I was frustrated by the lack of push, the final push. You know what I mean?
Sure. Yeah. I know exactly.
That it's so close, the player is dying to come, the player is dying to be so easy to make this deal. I'm not a direct, I see it from a player's point of view, me, if I wanted to go somewhere, like I went to Arsenal, I do my everything to go to Arsenal, and I see that when a player wants to go somewhere, it's easy. Forget contracts, sometimes it's more difficult if you have a long contract or something, but normally it should happen.
Mm.
And Xavi Alonso was one of them that, I was living it day to day because he was texting me all the time. I remember the whole holiday I was talking to him. He was texting me what's happening. And it was a shame because I think he would have been a great, great, great addition to that team.
Yeah.
He was made for Arsenal, I think.
I think so too. He would have been fantastic. The two of you in midfield together is something I'm sorry that we didn't get to see at some point. So look, things at Arsenal aren't necessarily successful in the way that they were before, but on an international level, they obviously were amazing for you and amazing for Spain in 2010. You win the World Cup. which is an incredible thing for any football player, to provide the assist for the goal in the final. Around that time, of course, we all started hearing a lot about your Barcelona DNA. The newspapers over there talked a lot about it, and some of the Barcelona players talked a lot about your Barcelona DNA and the speculation in the newspapers. Was that difficult to deal with? Was that a distraction in any way? You know, obviously we all know and understand your connection with that club. What was it like at that time? I mean, I'm thinking of, for example, when Pepe Reina put the jersey over you at that celebration. And
yeah, but this thing, I mean, I understand everything. Eh? But first of all, it was, he backstabbed me a little bit because, you know, in that moment, you just won the World Cup, you're drunk, you didn't sleep for ages, you're excited, the adrenaline, he comes from your back, whatever, you just get on with it. You know, it's a situation that, okay, and then they the two players put you up, like they don't let it take it out from you. So yeah, it's something that if I can go back and do it the way I want things to be done, I would have never done that. So it happened, and you know, I mean, for the moment and me leaving it in first person, being there and understanding the situation, where imagine you win the World Cup, like you do stupid things like you cannot even imagine, like you're having a dream. It's like you never expected when you're a child you will win the World Cup. So of course you can offend people sometimes doing stupid things and make mistakes, but I know from my heart that it's not something that it was up to me. It's not sure. Something that I planned or wanted to do. So you know, I'm sorry for it, and of course I would have done it differently, but it's not something major, big that concerns me a lot personally. But yeah, nothing affected me, because very little things affected me, to be honest. When I am training or playing, it has to be something so big related to my family directly or to my kids. That could distract me a little bit, but once I step into a football pitch, I don't care what people say. I don't care what people think of me. I just play my best, and I think over the years I proved that. You know, I played for Arsenal with fever. I played for Arsenal with a broken leg. I played for Arsenal when my granddad died. One morning we were playing. Who were we playing the night against the Belgium team? I forgot, in the Champions League, and I played the whole game. And after that, I took a private plane and I flew to his funeral. I mean, I would do it all over again in terms of my sacrifices for that club. I know that I did absolutely everything that I could, and I gave with pleasure and with satisfaction, because this is a club that gave me absolutely everything. And to today, anyone that talks badly about Arsenal in front of my face, I will not accept it, because Arsenal is part of me, always will be part of me, and it's probably, you know, one of the places where I feel the most loved in my life, in my career, obviously, but in my life as well.
What about the summer of 2011 then, when the move to Barcelona came about? There's so much in the newspapers, whether it's in the English papers, whether it's in the Spanish papers, and we know that the two papers, El Mundo Deportivo and Sport, are very Barcelona focused. So there are all these stories emerging at the time, and there's a lot going on at Arsenal, I think, at that time as well. I mean, how much of what happened that summer, I don't want you to necessarily tell secrets or anything like that, but is there stuff that went on that summer? Because if you were to ask me, we get a question sometimes for the podcast, like, if you could ask Arsene Wenger one question, what would it be? And my question is always like, what the fuck happened in the summer of 2011? That it was just all so chaotic, and you know, it ended with that Old Trafford thing and the signings and what have you, but the situation with yourself that had gone on for that summer with Nasri, et cetera, I mean, how much was going on behind the scenes there that fans weren't aware of?
Listen, it's a shame that we are not doing this interview like face to face and on a video, because I like to show my face, you know, when I talk like this, because sometimes it can be a bit not interpreted very well. But this comes from long before, you know. As I said, I gave absolutely everything for the club, and of course I was very well paid for it, and but really I took it. I think with Arsenal, I took it so deep. I was so in love with the whole club, with the whole situation. I was a captain. I always felt so much pressure, but a good pressure to put on myself, you know, to say I have to lead this team to win something. This was my absolute dream.
Mm.
Now, after winning the World Cup, winning with Barcelona, so the Champions League or something, this was my absolute dream. To win something as a captain of Arsenal Football Club, and I gave everything. And sometimes, you know, I used to go home, and after we lost or something, I used to cry, I used to suffer, I was living alone. I spent sleepless nights suffering, and then you lose a game, you are in the bus like this, destroyed, and then you hear, you know, some players laughing, thinking about where they will be going out later and stuff like that. And this was going on for a few years. And yeah, we were playing beautiful football, and I really enjoyed that side of everything. But I was putting so much pressure on myself to do well, to lead, to do everything. That I think at one point I felt kind of lonely.
Mm-hmm.
I think especially in the last 2-3 years, I felt Robin was, and probably Samir, were the players that, it's not an arrogant thing to say, this is how I felt at that time, you know, I will be completely honest here, but I felt that they were the players that were kind of my level mentally and technically and whatever you want to call it. Robin was, I couldn't count on him, unfortunately, for many parts of the season because he was injured.
Yeah.
He was a world-class player, a leader. He was helping me a lot, but he couldn't help me on the pitch for many seasons, unfortunately, many parts of the year. Because when I first left, and I saw the season he made after, straight after I left, that he was not injured at all. He was at the peak of his level.
Yeah,
physically, I was like, "Are you serious, man?" I leave. So many things came into my head. I have to admit, I was a bit empty. I was drained a little bit, let's say, you know, mentally, physically, in my soul, knowing that I am giving everything, that, as I said to you, a couple of signings that I knew that could have happened, and the club or something, they didn't make the effort to happen, when I know that this can be what you were saying, you know, 1-2 players away from making a difference. And I have to say that I asked to leave in 2010 after that, the World Cup. I asked to leave. I asked Arsene, I was very serious about it, and he told me absolutely not, it's impossible, and I pushed it, to be honest, a little bit, but he said, I went to his house, I went to his office, but he said no chance, and we kind of agreed that if the next season was going to be the same, then that he would look into it. So again, I'm happy to be where I am. I do a great preseason. I feel great physically. Then that year, I have a little bit of injuries. We still fight for the league until the last, I don't remember exactly now, but until the last 4 or 5 games.
Mm.
And once we lose it, I think we lost at Bolton. That was my last ever game for Arsenal, I think. And that day when we lost 2-1, I think, if I remember correctly, I kind of gave up, unfortunately. It's a really bad word to say, but I was drained mentally, and I didn't think I could do it anymore. I needed a new motivation. I needed a new challenge. I needed people surrounding me that are living for football, that are giving absolutely everything, you know, for the game as I used to, or as I was doing. And, you know, it wasn't meant to be. So, yes, in 2011, I said enough is enough. Mm. And I really pushed it. And You know, because I will tell you something, and I'm very, very honest. Playing for Barcelona was my dream, definitely, since I was little. But being at Arsenal, with all how all of you treated me, how I felt everything every time I stepped into Highbury, into the Emirates. I mean, I think, you know, there was no game that, you know, I couldn't feel your love, even if I didn't play well, or, you know, I was going through a bad moment. But I just felt I couldn't give you more than I could. And I felt at that moment, because now I'm nearly 33 and I think about many things, and you can regret things and stuff, but I'm telling you what I was thinking at that moment.
Sure.
And at that moment, I just thought that my ambitions, my individual ambitions, and my mentality was, how can I explain that?
Not in line with some of what was happening at the club?
Yes. Something like that. Something like that. And seeing some behaviors from certain players or something like this made me feel that I wanted to check something else. But for sure, one thing I know is that if it was not because of that, maybe I would have left Arsenal eventually, but never at that time. Never at 24 years old, when I'm about, because I picked very early as well in my career, and I thought Arsenal was made for me, and it was the right club for me, the perfect club for me, I would say. And I would not have left Arsenal, at least for another 2-3 years. Until then, I would have seen Xavi, you know, have 33, 34, and then made the move at the right time. But I felt I just had to. It's one of these things that you are working and working and working, giving your all. And I used to take it so personally, every loss, I'm thinking it's my fault, and stuff like this. And yeah, little things that didn't go our way as well made me take the decision before that I should have, or that I would have.
Sure. I mean, I think you've probably answered this already, but, you know, you talk about it now at 33 years of age, and you think about, you know, I think back to when I was 24 and trying to make decisions that big. I guess there are things that when you look back on it, perhaps you might do slightly differently, or you might expect people at Arsenal to have done differently. Like, could that situation have been smoother for everyone that summer, or was it just because it's a difficult one? Yeah.
Listen, I'm very, very honest. I the only thing that kills me in a way is that I had to be so pushy to Arsene. The guy gave me absolutely everything. The guy that had confidence in me to put me at 16 years old, the one that made me start games, big games, at 17. The guy that made me have my debut for the Spanish national team, because without him, Luis Aragonés would not have taken me going to a World Cup at 19. I owe everything to him, all my career. I know that. After, I had to work for it, and I think I worked very, very hard to earn his trust, and it was up to me many times to prove him right. But that is one of those things that I don't feel well with it, because I pushed my move in 2011. That's for sure. I did things that I'm not proud of. But if I didn't do it, it would have never happened. And it had to happen at that moment. I just couldn't have another year of, yeah, we play well, but...
Next year.
You have to think, a season is long. A season is very long. Mm. And you go through these moments, yeah, and you've been strong and determined and positive, because you have to understand, at 21 I was captain, I was making meetings by myself to Sol Campbell, came back, Lehmann came back, I was leading the meetings to them. You have to understand, this is big for a 21 years old, you know. I was leading that team, and I did it with all my power, with all my love, with all my determination. That's 100% sure. I'm very proud of what I gave to the club. But that month, I felt bad. I cannot say I regret it, because it in that moment is what I felt, is what it had to happen for everything, for my head, for my body, for my heart. I just felt it was enough, even though I didn't want it, believe me, I didn't really want it to go that early to Barcelona, because I didn't feel maybe it was the right time. I knew there were so many players in my position. I spoke to Pep, and I knew that I could play, and I knew that, and in fact, my first year in Barcelona is amazing. We win 4 trophies, I score in 2 finals. We lose against Chelsea in that semi-final that you will lose only once out of 100. But yeah, overall, I think it was too early for me to make that move, but I just had to.
What was it like then at Barcelona, at the club that you grew up with, and you know, playing in that stadium? As you said, it was a dream, and I suppose, you know, the dream of being a professional footballer is one thing, and this Arsenal opportunity comes along. But I suppose as a small kid, as you know, if you support a team, to get to play for that team, and a team that, you know, at that time was so good.
You have to understand that I remember Pep took over Barcelona 2008. I have a meeting. Pere Guardiola, his brother, worked for Nike, and I was a Nike player then. So he, one time in the summer, he calls me and he asked me to meet me at the Rey Juan Carlos next to the stadium. So I go to meet him about maybe something about Nike or something. He told me, "Do you want to play for Barcelona?" And I said, "I'd love to play for Barcelona one day, definitely." Like this, I was 20, 21. And he said, "You have to come. Pep wants to build this amazing thing." This was his first year. He was about to start. And I just didn't feel like it, you know, because I was happy.
Sure.
You know, this is what I'm trying to say. The same way that at 2021, I said, no, I'm so happy there. It's made for me, this club. It's amazing. I think it's too early. At 24, after I gave basically my all, you know, and my mind was exhausted, to be honest, I took a completely different road, but I still think it was too early. But I just had to.
So let's talk about the return to England. And at the time, certainly I would have loved to have seen you come back to Arsenal. A lot of Arsenal fans would have loved to have seen you come back. Was that ever a possibility? We heard about buyback clauses and all those kind of things. Was it a possibility? Was it something that was discussed? Was it something you would have been open to?
I think I said it in an interview a long time ago. The reality, this is how it is, and the only way it is. Once I decide to leave Barcelona, Arsenal, I put in the contract that Arsenal can have a clause to buy me back if I decide to leave Barcelona one day, and the clause was that once I decide to leave and I have the permission of the Barcelona president, that Arsenal will have the first option whatsoever. Mm-hmm. Before any club, Arsenal will have the first option, and I cannot speak to any other club for 1 week until Arsenal makes a decision if they want it or not. So my agent, Darren Dean, obviously is the son of David Dean and a very, very good friend of Arsene, and they know the families very well. So Darren spoke to Arsene. He didn't give him an answer, to be honest. And then we just had to wait 1 full week to see if Arsenal responded. And then definitely this was my first option. In my mind, I'm telling everyone I'm going to Arsenal. This is what I want. Arsene Gazidis and everyone, or nobody basically, said anything for a week. And then the pass, and me, I didn't want to be a beggar, you know, like we told them once, they know the situation. Yeah. If in 1 week they haven't said anything, because they, straight away, I knew that probably they didn't want me back. So they could have just said after 3 hours, no, we are not interested. So straight away, I could have spoken to other teams.
Yeah.
They waited the whole week without giving me a response, and still since then, no response whatsoever. But after the week, I had to take my chances, my solution. I had Manchester City, I had Manchester United, and then I spoke to Mourinho, which I didn't think it would ever happen, to be honest. He knows that, and everyone knows that because of what happened when I was at Arsenal and Chelsea, Barcelona, Real Madrid, many, many things. But to be honest, after I left the room with Mourinho, I said to Darren, I said, that's it. I don't need to talk to anyone else. I'm going to Chelsea. There was no money involved, nothing. What he told me, the team that he wanted to make, what he thought of me, where he wanted me to play, how he wanted me to play absolutely every game. And this is what I wanted. On top of that, it's London, it's not Manchester.
Sure.
I love London. For me, London is my home. And that was a big fact. And I knew that this would have a lot of repercussion with Arsenal.
Mm.
It could have been, to be honest, it could have been similar if I went to City or United, because the most important is that I wanted to go to the Premier League. First of all, I wanted to go back to Arsenal because Arsenal, I felt it's always my home, and what I lived there, you know, probably I haven't lived it anywhere in terms of everything. But I wanted to go back to the Premier League. That's for sure. I didn't want to go to Italy or another club in Spain, because after Real Madrid and Spain, I thought that my level was very, very high, and I wanted to play for a very good club. And in Spain, for example, after Real Madrid and Barcelona, the other clubs are, they're good, but not the same level. And I thought, going back to the Premier League was the best for me. But after Arsenal didn't come back to me, I had to make a decision for my career. I cannot just retire at 27.
You should have. I'm sure.
And I just felt for many things that Chelsea was the right solution at that time. And to be honest, thank God that I took that decision, because I know it can be controversial with the Arsenal fans and everything. But these 5 years, I've been very happy there. Mm. I have to say, we've won everything in England, the most winning team in English football in the time that I've been there. So, playing some great football at times, I have to say that with the fans, there's been a connection impeccable, which I obviously my performances had to keep up, because, when someone comes from Arsenal, probably you are at the point of reference. But I think we always had a great understanding, and I have to say I've been so happy there, so happy, and everyone treated me really good. So we can always guess what would have happened or anything, but the reality is that I went there, won two Premier Leagues, which was my dream, FA Cups, League Cups, Europa League. So in the end, it was meant to be, and very happy for the choice I made.
Sure, and that sort of, as you said, it has some implications for your relationship with some Arsenal fans, who obviously football fans by their very nature are partisan. So you can be a hero here, and you can be an absolute villain if you go there. But is that something that you even think about? As a professional, this is your job. Is that a consideration when you make a decision like the one that you made?
Definitely. I mean, we are not robots. We have our feelings, we have our hearts. I cannot deny that probably at Arsenal I had the best years of my life. Nobody will take this away from me.
Sure.
They were 8 years, beautiful years. Okay, it's true. We didn't win as much as I would have liked to, or people would have expected it, but I played the Champions League final. I was part of, I didn't win it. It doesn't count as I won it, but I was part of the invincible teams that I I learned so much. I experienced every day with them. Won the FA Cup. We played League Cup finals. We made some good runs in the Champions League, getting semi-finals and stuff like that. Things that nowadays you don't see with Arsenal. For you know, you go, you get knocked out in the group stage or in the last 16. So you know, before with what I think it was a worse team, not a worse team, but not a better team like now or the last 3-4 years with Cazorla, with
it didn't have the investment, certainly, did it? You know, it didn't have the investment back then that the team has had recently. So
that's why I always thought that, as you said and mentioned very well, that with 2-3 players more, we would have won something. I'm convinced of that. And at the end as well, you know, you have to make a decision. There are types of players like, let's say, Totti. Totti, I think he won very few titles with Roma, but he stayed there the whole life. Probably he'll have it's basically Roma is Totti, no? When they talk about it. But then when he looks back at his career, is it what he wanted or not? You know, what he could have played for, let's say, Real Madrid and win the Champions League or win many other things. God knows, you know, everyone is different and everyone has different feelings. Maybe him being in Roma, from Roma, being third in the league was enough for him, you know, even if he didn't win. And then for me, that wasn't enough. You know, I felt that my ambition at one point, as I said to you before, was on a higher level than what I felt the club had. I'm not talking about Arsene, because I still believe that Arsene didn't have as much to say as people think he did. But
do you mean in terms of
money transfers and how much could he get to the level that he could? You know, sure. After there are people on top of him that make even bigger decisions. So yeah, that's basically it.
You're 33 now, and do you think about what happens when you stop playing? I'm not suggesting that's going to happen anytime soon, but you know, as somebody who is
playing at all, I won't. And I don't know for how long it will be.
Okay, well, you know, get well soon. But in the longer term, do you see your life in football continuing? Is coaching something you would want to move into? Is management something you want to move into?
Definitely. It's my life is football. I mean, there's no day that I'm not watching. I'm not watching a game like. In the how long I left Arsenal, 2011, that's 9 years. I've missed maybe, 20 games. You know, I'm a fanatic. I'm sick, you know, in this in this case. But, you know, I love football a lot. I hope I can play for another 3-4 years. And then after that, it's something that I want to do straight away. I want to take my budget straight away as soon as I finish and start very quickly, yeah.
Okay. Can I just finish, because I know I've taken up quite a bit of your time and I really appreciate it, and I'm sure everybody listening will appreciate this as well. But can I just ask you a couple of quick ones to finish off? If you can do it, I don't know if you can, but can you tell me your favorite Arsenal goal?
My one? The one I scored?
Yeah.
It has to be something against Spurs for sure. One of the two I scored against Spurs, because they were actually beautiful. But probably my best goal, was that goal against Spurs at the Emirates, when straight away after Robin scored after the kickoff, we get the ball, and I still don't know how I did it, to be honest. But it was amazing at the right time. And it's one of these moments that you don't forget for sure.
No, that was a brilliant goal. I do remember we hadn't finished celebrating the first goal, and it was like, what?
It wasn't even shown on TV, I think.
Though they literally, I think they cut to it about
replay or something.
Yeah. So it happened that quickly. And just finally, a favorite Arsenal game that you were involved in.
Favorite? Well.
Mm. Not necessarily the one in which you played best, but just, you know, one which perhaps lives longest in your memory.
Oof, there are many, huh? There are many, many, many. Just because we won the title, I think that game against Manchester United in the FA Cup, against an amazing United team. We were playing without Thierry Henry. He was injured. I played that game, and I didn't expect to play, to be honest. We played in the end three in midfield, Gilberto, Patrick, and I. And I think it was my second trophy, well, Community Shield, and then straight away winning the FA Cup was something very special. It was very special, and I was very happy that day, I remember. But there's many, like San Siro winning the being the first English team.
It was a good goal as well.
It was a good goal. I think the goalkeeper was a bit my friend, but it's all right. We'll take that. That game against Spurs, the 5-4.
Why
not? Was an amazing game. Villarreal, when Jens Lehmann saves the penalty that brings us to the Champions League final. There are many, to be honest, many, many that I can't recall, but every game playing for Arsenal was very special, to be honest.
All right. Well, listen, I'm going to leave it there, and thank you very much again for your time. It's great to finally have had this conversation. We've been planning it or trying to make it happen for a long time, and I'm glad we finally did. I really appreciate you talking to me, Cesc. Thanks a million.
Thank you so much, and just a quick message to the Arsenal fans, because I don't have many times to do that, but I left in a quick way 9 years ago, and I still didn't have the time to talk to them much, but thank you for everything that they have done for me. I know that sometimes, you know, the things that have been said, and some lies, something's true, something's not, but I know, you know, real fans and every single one of you have a little bit of me in their heart. Me the same for all of you. And thank you. And hopefully we'll see each other soon, another time. Thank you so much.
There you go. That was me and Cesc Fabregas. And I just want to say a big thank you to him again for taking the time, for sitting down and having that conversation with me for this podcast, and for being so forthright throughout. Like I said at the start, I'm not here to tell anybody what they can or should think about Cesc. You know, people have their own opinions, and that's fine. But maybe after listening to this, you might have a slightly different perspective. Maybe not. Maybe it just confirms everything you already knew in your head. Either way, I hope you enjoyed listening to it. And hopefully it will, you know, spark some debate and conversations. Polite, mannerly conversations, if you don't mind. As ever, I just want to thank you for listening. Thank you for supporting us in everything that we do here on the site. It's really very much appreciated. It's strange times that we're living in, and hopefully this hour or so has taken your mind off some of the stuff that's going on outside there. And, you know, we will do our best to keep it going over the weeks and months ahead. I'll leave it there for now, though. You take care of yourselves. Stay well. Stay healthy. Stay out of big groups. Wash your hands. Do all that stuff. And we'll catch you on the next one. Until then, cheers. Bye-bye.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free, or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.